This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
On today's episode of That Peter Crouch Podcast, we sit down with Emil Heskey. We talk about his TV debut on the Rod and Emu show, Michael Owen's verdict on who's better, Emil or myself, and find out why I sit in Ealing Police Station in my afternoons. Hello and welcome to That Peter Crouch Podcast with me, Peter Crouch. Got the notorious SID with me and Chris Stark, and a very special guest, Emil Heskey.
Thank you for how having you, me. Mate? I'm good, mate. Yourself?
We've been looking forward to this one, haven't we? Especially you, Chris. You've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, I'm really buzzing about this because you're an era of footballer that I would have, genuinely would have the poster on the wall. I have you in the form of a coin. I remember there was a little coin collection at one point during one of the tournaments. Got you on there as well.
Oh, really?
I think so. I've got to dig that out somewhere. I just feel there's so much to talk about today. There's a lot to go through. And I think you're one of those people that we've been talking about getting on the podcast for quite a while. So just good to get you on. And perfect timing because we've been talking about Emil quite a bit recently in Cockney rhyming slang time.
That was obviously going out for a Heskey.
Yeah.
Is obviously going out for a meal. Yeah. You must have had that before.
All the time.
See, me and my mates, we thought that we were being really original there. But I take it that's a normal thing,
yeah. From when I was young, anyway.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk about when you were young, right? So you were at Leicester from 9 years old?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Always into football?
Athletics.
Oh, really?
Yeah, loved athletics. Sprinter, long jump.
Really?
Yeah, loved it. But then obviously with athletics, it's kind of structured training, isn't it? Whereas with football, you just go get a ball on the park, 20 of you, 11 of you, however many of you, and just go and play. Mm. So that was it, really. And then got spotted by school. I didn't play Sunday League football until after I went to Leicester.
I've read this and this fascinates me. So you were signed for a club before you'd even done Sunday League?
Yeah. So I was signed for Leicester, which is what it's called, Centre of Excellence.
Yeah.
I'd signed for Leicester Centre of Excellence, and one of the dads was the manager of a local football team, and he goes, "Oh, do you fancy coming down and playing, blah blah blah." At this time, my family are quite religious, so Sundays is for church. So I said, yeah, no problem, just ask my parents, and then in the end they let me play, but it was nowhere near where I lived.
So what were they doing when they signed you? How do you read that situation? Because you must have been terrible at football but just brilliant at athletics, right?
I was great at everything, mate.
I can't believe you gave him the terrible football shout.
It's just another striker on the podcast, isn't it?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I was going to say, so what was a young Emil Heskey? Was it always a striker? Nah. Was it a defender? Was it a winger? Was it
just
everywhere?
It's funny because when you got at nine, what are positions?
Yeah, true.
What are positions? So you just give me the ball and I'll run. I was quicker than everyone else, so you just run with the ball, try and do a trick. You see a trick on television, you go and try at Centre of Excellence. I had a wonderful coach with Neville Hamilton, who's sadly not with us now, but he was a trickster, played for Leicester, played for Wolves, and we'd practice all these tricks, but then I'd go back to school and practice them and do that sort of stuff. And I ended up playing what I would probably say is midfield, but it was just like, just get him on the ball and run with it. But then when I went to Sunday League, because I was big, play me at the back. But then I would take the ball, run with it, and just shoot. And then I'd go back, and then I'd get it again, and that's what I'd done in the end. No, I'd gone up front. So yeah, that's how I ended up playing up front.
No way. So as you progress at Leicester, like, you know, did you know you had a chance like early, like 40? Because obviously you made your debut at 17 and you were a regular in the first team at 18. So like around kind of 15, 16, was there a buzz around you, around Leicester?
Yeah, I think I'd always played with older people around my area. So I was playing with 18-year-olds at 12, 13. And obviously we know back then it's not for the faint hearted. You if you cried or if you whinged, or then you're not coming back again. So you'd get kicked all over the place. So at 15, I ended up playing for the 18s. And that was kind of the start for me, but I'd obviously progressed all the way through and I was doing okay. At 15, I went and played with the 18s. We were Northampton away on the cricket pitch. 1-0 down at half time. Yeah, 1-0 down at half time. And obviously the manager back then coming ranting and raving. And I'm a 15-year-old just not wanting to look at anyone. Just no eye contact. Just keep your head down. You don't want to get bollocks yourself. So sorry, the language. Then the manager goes, he's coming on. And I'm there sitting there like, okay, come on. Scored two, come off injured. And we won 2-1.
So were you just physically big for your age at that point? Is that why they were playing you in those age groups? You're one of those.
I was a man child, but I still had I still had the ability. It's funny because I speak to my parents, my dad, and I'm like, because my boys are 18 and I was playing from, I think I could have played from 16, first team, really? Because I was that size. And I could handle myself as well. And I was like, was I that much bigger than him? Because my dad said, well, yes, he was.
Yeah.
Compared to your boys now?
Yeah. He was physically ready. At 16, 17, you were physically ready to play.
So you were a man-child, but you were also quite level-headed, I understand, because you'd had a sort of sense of fame from quite a young age as well. I believe your first TV appearance was aged 11.
Yeah, at Rod and Emu Show.
Yes. Rod and Emu Show. Beyond that. What? Talk us through that, please. I mean, that's probably more intriguing than the entire football career.
The thing is, and then I get a little bit of stick for that. Not a stick, but people like take the mic, but everyone wanted to be on that show. So, church again, Sunday, Boys Brigade. And we got invited to be on the show and go on the course.
That's the assault course.
And that's where Emily comes from, because they kept on calling me Emily instead of Emil.
Oh, really? On the show?
Yeah.
Oh, no way.
And so how did you do on that assault course?
Oh, we won.
Of course you did. Yeah. What do you win for that?
It seems like it's just going to be a constant flow. It's like the best of this, won this, done that.
Yeah. All right. Well, so listen, we go from like Rod and Emu, obviously, so then straight into Filbert Street, right? How do you... I'm just trying to think now, for a young lad coming into a side, a lot of kind of big characters, like strong men, kind of...
What we got there? Taggart.
I'm thinking Taggart, Walsh, Marshall,
Elliot,
Claridge,
yes,
Muzzy. Is he?
Muzzy came a bit later. Muzzy came.
Good team though.
Huge team. really good team. Really good characters. And this is the thing when you're looking at teams now, where are the characters coming from? And we had. We probably had too many.
Yeah,
we had probably had too many.
What was that dressing room like? Like, because I I'm just outside looking in.
Well, you would know because Martin's bad anyway. So imagine having. We had some good times, some wild times. It's fascinating because you go from obviously I went from there to Liverpool, and you really learn about structure and professionalism and stuff like that.
Not quite there at Leicester, was it?
It's a nutcase on an asylum, basically.
We were winning things though. We were winning things, and I tell everyone before every League Cup final went with Leicester, we were in Tenerife.
Yeah.
We were telling me.
I seen you there.
Yeah.
I seen you there one day.
Mid-season training.
I don't know if you remember this. I was in the youth team at Tottenham. I know this is just coming back to me now. Veronica's, along with Veronica's there, like Busby's and Bobby's. I've seen you there. And because obviously I'm in the youth team. I remember seeing you. And I remember having a chat to you, whatever, because like Ledley King, I was out there with Ledley King.
Okay.
And Ledley was just getting in the first team. You wouldn't have known who I was because I hadn't been anywhere near the first team now. And I remember you and Ledley kind of having a discussion, and Led was like, "Yeah, no, I could have you because you'd both had a few minutes. You get destroyed, man. You're both having it like that. That is brilliant. So good.
So we would literally be in warm weather training in Tenerife before every cup final. It was mad that when you think back at it and then you go to Liverpool and then you see proper professionalism and how it's supposed to be. But we won trophies.
Yeah.
So the characters that we had it was part of our story as well, of who we are and what we were. And I think Gerry Taggart talks about it and says we were the best pub team in England at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's tongue in cheek. But again, it was just great.
But you know what? Team spirit goes a long way. Yeah, you know, like, it's almost like I'm not calling you the Wimbledon crazy gang, but you know, it felt like because you had more quality, you had a lot of quality in there as well. But it felt like, yeah, it was like the underdog, wasn't it? And you were getting to cup finals, you're having great success, and it's a good time to be a Leicester fan.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And this is the thing, when we look back at what we achieved, it was like, I think we went to 97, 99, and 2000 League Cup finals. Yeah. We lost in 99 to Spurs and won the other two. And then as well, when you go up, and everyone knows, when you come up as a team from the Championship, which was Division 1, to the Premier League, it's like they're getting relegated straight away. We finish top off of the table every single time. Mm. So we actually overachieved in essence, but we had fun doing it.
Like individually, from your journey, it seemed like you went in and it was a constant rise. Yeah. Was there bumps at Leicester for you? Because you got into a good environment, a good team. As you said, there you was cup finals. You had obviously Martin Neal had a real tight-knit squad. Mm. But for you individually, like mentally wise, because obviously you're big, you're strong, you go in somewhere, you're expected to be powerful, play.
No, I didn't. Stand I, don't, every week. I don't think there was any bumps in that. And I'll tell you why, because I was a local lad.
Yeah.
I could get away with a lot. I could go and not score.
From the fans.
Yeah. And that means a lot because they're the ones who rise. And then I've got a manager who absolutely adores me.
Yeah.
And I can do whatever I want, more or less.
Yeah.
And so it was just a constant rise. And because again, I'd come through, like I said, I started my youth team at 15. So a lot of these fans would have seen me. And one thing with Leicester fans, they watch their youth team so they know who's coming next and stuff like that. Because we had Julian Joachim, we had Neil Lewis. Players like that would come through. So I was kind of the next, but they'd seen me from 15. And then at 17, I'm playing a first team game. 18, I'm a regular. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't playing up front, I was playing on the wing. But I was just attacking and going. And they loved that about me.
You talk about the manager. Maybe we could dig down just slightly on your relationship with Martin O'Neill. Mm. And there's an incredible story about how he... What's the story with the letters with Martin O'Neill?
Oh, he would collect letters. And when he first came to Leicester, it didn't go too well. I think we ended up winning the last... I think it was 9 of 10 games, our last 10 games, snuck into the playoffs and then won the playoffs. But up to then, it wasn't really going too well. And as we know, fans can be a little bit fickle and people would write in and he would keep them all and then reply to them when he's doing well.
When he's done well.
So, yeah, he's fantastic like that.
Did you feel he had a big role in your life at that particular time?
Yeah.
And is it fair to say you had a special bond? And how would you describe that relationship with
him? I think it was like a father figure. It could have its ups and downs, but mainly ups. And the main ups were because he wanted the best from me. It's now you look back at certain things that he says during games, and I'll pick on one. I know Sav might not be happy too happy about this. A ball came into me, held it up, laid it into Sav, and he took a touch, and then someone nicked the ball off him, blah, blah, blah. I got the one who got the rollicking for that. Like thinking, you know, when you're thinking, well, I've kept the ball, but when you think back at it, and then we're exchanging, you know what he's like, we're exchanging I'm on the pitch, he's on the sideline, we're exchanging, and I forgot about the game, and we're just frustrated. But then when you think back, it's like, well, the reason he's saying that is because why am I giving it to him when I'm the one who can run with the ball, I'm the one who can create stuff, I'm the one who can change a game, why would I give it to someone else? So he says, just get it, turn and run. Oh yeah, all right. Yeah, you're right.
He didn't have a lot of faith in Savin, did he? It sounds like
we did the same. I think it was tags as well. We had got tags for giving it to Sav as well.
Why do you think he really focused in on you? Why was there something just, so special?
It wasn't just
you
me.
Both?
It was he pinpointed the best things from every single player. Mm. So Muzzy was another one. Yeah. When we was at Villa, it was Gabby.
Yeah.
But I was a runner with the ball, so I could actually travel with the ball and get the team up the pitch and create something from there. And that's all he wanted me to do, and he pushed me to do that every single time. And you need, and now and again, you need them players. You need players who are actually going to change a game.
Yeah.
And I was that player, especially at Leicester.
When you're like young and you're scoring goals in the Premier League and you're getting to cup finals, like there's always a buzz. There's always going to be a buzz around a young player like that. And obviously, there's a huge buzz around. And that's obviously when you take the opportunity to go to Liverpool. But we got here. You know, there was Spurs, Villa, Blackburn, Borussia Dortmund,
Roma as well.
Yeah, all vying for your signature. What was that like?
When I knew Liverpool were involved, it didn't really matter about the others. Yeah, it was great to have all these watching you. I could have gone at 16, but I wanted to prove myself at Leicester. I'm born and raised in Leicester, so I wanted to prove myself. I wanted my family to be there when I'm actually playing regularly. So it was a great time to be around the club as well. Filbert Street, even though it was a fortress for us.
I played there, it was
great for us. We got the new stadium now and it's all, but that was fantastic for us. It wasn't a nice place for away fans to come.
And you've got the opportunity to go to Liverpool. You said that was the only club you were going to go to. You're Liverpool fans as a boy, right? So I've had, you know, been fortunate enough to be in that position where you go, did you sign at Anfield, or did you have a look round at, like, or did you go to the Melwood first, or how did it come about? Like when you signed?
Yeah, signed at Melwood. Mine was quite quick in that sense of signing, because I was supposed to go at the end of the season, but they triggered it in March, paid extra to trigger it, and then next minute I'm in a car going up to go and sign at Melwood. But I'd already organised. We'd already got it in. For the end of the season. Yeah. So, yeah, it was kind of bang there.
So you're straight into games then?
Yeah, so I'd literally gone from playing for Leicester against Sunderland. We won 5-1, I think it was. And then going to play Sunderland.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And how did that go? How did the initial like time at Liverpool go?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, it was...
So from the moment you arrived, you were happy?
Yeah, fantastic. Mm. But again, I only know Leicester. And then you go to a big club and it's like...
This is probably done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as well, I'd come from school and I'd been at Leicester all this time, and then and I remember getting criticised for wearing a tracksuit at press conference, and I'm like, well, I don't know any different. No one's told me to wear a suit. So and these are little things that you realise. This is the top you need to be, you're representing us, and this wasn't the club, this was more media. But the club were fine. I think the club were fine with it. But you know, media, there's an expectation of when you're this sort of height, you've got to be presented in a certain way. And I didn't know, because I was a young kid. I was 22 years old, just turned. So I didn't know that I was supposed to be wearing that. But yeah, for me, it was just about getting on the pitch and enjoying my football.
You said, didn't you, when you went to Liverpool, it was more about impressing Stevie and Carol, like your teammates, rather than the manager. Obviously, you want to impress the manager to get in the team. Did you find that as well? Like, you know, you bet yourself.
He was a lot more kind of senior when I played.
Yeah, like, no, I don't mean that Stevie, but I mean like when you go there, the players, okay, the standard of training to be here.
No, the standard of training is just up there. But you got to remember, I was in the national team by then, so I'd actually been around all these players that I was going into to playing with. I'd already been around them. So I'd already seen, and you know, you go from your club, and now, no disrespect to that, I was at Leicester. And then you go to the national team, it's night and day, mate. You come off, you can wring your shirt because of like how much you sweat and the running that you do. You're having to have a massage because of the amount of work that you're having to get through. And then you just come to Liverpool and it's pretty much the same. So I was used to that. The only bit I wasn't used to was how full-on training was in the sense of tackling. We didn't really tackle at Leicester because obviously we had a small squad. So there's like no tackling. We've got to, you can get close. You can probably have a little 50-50, but no real bad.
Yeah.
Come in, Stefan Encher just went straight through me. I'm
like, okay. First session sort of thing.
First session, went straight through the back of me. I'm like, okay. Okay. But I'm okay with that because, again, I can give as much good as I can take, to be honest.
Well, we know that. But, you know, we'll get on to Rio in a bit.
Who surprised you when you turn up with, like, obviously so many talented players there? I think Michael Owen's like in the peak of his career, you know, early when you arrive. Steven Gerrard's probably coming through then, is he? Yeah. Sammy Hoopier, like so many good players. Was Robbie still there, or did
Robbie,
he moved on?
Robbie was just, his finishing was amazing. Yeah. And he still is now, to be fair to him. He's still got that left foot. But yeah, his finishing was amazing because, again, you go into certain training sessions and, like, Robbie will go, where do you want that, Emil? Oh, I want it there. Bang. left foot there. Then I go out, and I want it in that stage, bang, in that stage. You're like, nah, he can't be doing that again. I want it there every single time.
Really?
Yeah, he was fantastic. But yeah, I was with Jamie Redknapp as well at the time. And we're talking about passers of the ball, pingers of the ball. He was up there.
Crisp.
Yeah, he was up there with the best of them.
Yeah, so good, wasn't he? I played with him at Southampton, obviously slightly later in his career. But I mean, he was. Would he have been captain then, Jamie?
Yeah.
So when you arrived, captain. Jamie would have been captain.
Yeah, club captain. Yeah.
So Carragher would have been
coming through. Wasn't
he? Yeah, we're the same age. So 22. I went to Liverpool at 22, so Carroll being a young player there.
Yeah, because there's an England under 16s game, right? This is an incredible situation where you were on the bench and Carragher was up front, right?
Yeah, so Carroll was a forward at
Liddleshall.
Yeah,
Liddleshall. Did you go to Liddleshall? No, you didn't go
I didn't go to the trials. Oh, right. I don't think my mum and dad wanted me to leave, so I didn't go to the trials. But then it's funny because then I went to a trial for one of the camps and got in. So and then went to the Euros.
Did any of your family play football? Because you often talk about your mum and dad. Yeah. How did they navigate everything? Was this all quite almost foreign to them in how they, everything that was happening for you? And did they want to have quite a bit of control?
You know, the funny thing is just, it was, they knew I had talent and it was just like leaving it. My dad was played cricket. That's from the Caribbean, so cricket is the main thing. He did love football. He did play football, but it was like local. My mum was more athletics. And yeah, they just left me with my agent to do what I wanted and go about your career.
Fair play to them. It's a lot of trust, isn't it?
If you don't know how to navigate now, it's different for me. But if you don't know how to navigate that, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You kind of just say, okay, well, let me leave it to them because I see them as the ones who are possibly going to look after him the best.
What was the highlight for you at Liverpool? Obviously, the UEFA Cup win was unbelievable. When at the FA Cup, you know, you've had League Cups, Super Cups. It was a period where under Houllier, where it was like obviously the Premier League was the only one kind of missing. Champions League as well, but like the cup, it was an unbelievably successful period for Liverpool. Yeah. Still,
it's a weird part of my career because again, I'd gone from Leicester and we'd gone to three cup finals in 4 years. Then I go to Liverpool and we go to three cup finals in the year, in the season, and then we go and win the Super Cup and the Community Shield, and you're like, oh, this is normal. It's not. And then your reality hits and you have your ups and downs. But I loved every minute of it. And it was great to be part of that because I think, was it 95 was the last time before that they'd won something. So to come into that and the pressure was on. And the weirdest part about it now, I look back and I didn't feel any pressure.
Really?
I didn't.
Brilliant.
I just.
That's just young.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not until you get there and then you realise, and then after a year it sinks in, and then 2 years you're like, oh, I moved for 11 million. But I moved for 11 million 2 years ago. Why didn't I think about it then?
Yeah.
Never thought about it.
Yeah. So what, like that game, like obviously the UEFA Cup game, like unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like what was that like?
I'll be honest with you, I had to watch that game back to really understand what went on.
What happened?
Yeah, because that was right towards the end of the season. So we played 63 games that season. I think I played 59 and I was running on fumes. Because I'd played so many games and I played every final. I couldn't remember half of the stuff. And then I watched it back and you're like, Jesus, this is a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Up and down. And then Gary Mack scores that goal. And it was an own goal, but Gary Mack scores that goal. And you're like, everyone's cheering, but like, oh, the game's done. Golden goal.
It's unbelievable, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, what a game of football. I remember watching it just in disbelief. Yeah. Some of the game, you know, finals that Liverpool been involved in, obviously with Istanbul as well.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah. On a personal level, of all the trophies there, was there one that FA really... Cup. Yeah.
I think because growing up, that's the only real...
That's matches. What I say. Yeah. The FA Cup was,
it's the only one really you can watch on telly as well. Back in the day,
the full Wembley Arsenal experience.
Yeah, and the way we won it as well.
Yeah,
you know, we got
Cardiff,
we
Mike
got
Lowen.
Battered.
Yeah,
we got battered. And it's fun. It's fascinating when you actually watch games back. And I recently watched back an Everton game where Gary Mack scored the goal right at the end.
Yeah.
In my head, I thought that we dominated the game and we did really well and we won that game. They were lucky to get the goals. They battered us.
Yeah.
Madness, they just kept on pumping the ball into Big Dunk. And yeah, and he was just nodding it down and people running onto it. And I'm like, I didn't see that game going. Like, I thought that we were dominant. Yeah. I thought we passed it around. We just kept on lumping it back. And I'm winning flick-ons. But they're obviously, that's the way they play. So they're obviously better at it. And we should have really slowed it. And then we got Igor Bishan sent off as well. So yeah, it was that. Yeah, when you look back at games, you're like, that's not how I saw it.
I just want to touch on your partnership, obviously, with Michael Owen. You know, he says that you were the best partner you ever played with. That's a huge compliment because he played with me. So, what was that like? Obviously, it just felt so good, and obviously, you know, culminating in the Germany game where you combined so well.
Yeah.
But you know, even that final you just referenced it with Arsenal, like, just a great connection.
Yeah, I think the funny thing is, look, we went back so far because England under 18s, my under 18, he's 2 years younger than me, so he's 16 playing in our 18s, and he was the main player then, and it just clicked. Everything just worked really well. He understood what I wanted. I understood what he wanted. Mm. And we just worked together. Mm. And it's funny because then we go to the Euros and we play France. We do well. I think we drew 1-1. France won the tournament. I think we came third in the end. Thierry Henry up front with Anelka, Trezeguet, Galas, Silvestre, Willy Sagnol.
Wow.
Yeah. So all these players, it's me and Michael up front. Gerard Houllier is the manager.
Wow.
So then when he goes and signs for Liverpool as the manager, he brings me to go and play with Michael.
Wow, okay. So that's
how
it'd been something that had been in the pipeline for a while, and we'd already played together with the national team, and then it just worked so well. And yeah, we had a
Did it work so well? Was it stuff opposite the training? Was it but obviously you can see why. Like you hold up, and but was it worked on training a lot, or was it just a natural?
Really? Honestly, natural. And we spoke to each other obviously on the pitch and what we wanted, etc. Yeah. Michael will understand that if you can't get it in 9 times out of 10, I'm going to win a flick on. Yeah. So he knows exactly where it's going to go, and if he can't get to it, give me a shout so I can just nod it back to him, and we just work as a partnership. And we're losing that a little bit in the game because we only really play with one up front. And you'll find that when you play two up front, they're doing the same runs, and we used to work on it at Leicester a lot anyway. One come short, one go long, blah blah blah.
Yeah. What about obviously it was going so well then, and then obviously, you know, with England, and it's hard. I've been there myself at Liverpool and England. Like, scrutiny gets so much, and you're kind of on a global level. And you know, we look at certain players at the moment. Like the criticism, it was too much at times. How did you find it?
Yeah, look, you've got to grow some real thick skin, especially when you're playing one at the big clubs and two with the national team, because everyone's it's more so now as well, because again, the reality is it will only be in the papers, and that papers will be gone tomorrow, and it will be in the pubs where you're not going to hear most of that. Where now it's really literally it's in your pocket, isn't it? 24/7. They've got access to you 24/7 in your pocket, unless you're ready to switch off, that's there, and they can get to you straight away. I had to grow thick skin because, again, it was, you've been there as well. So.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, with me, like, it was like I hadn't really kind of proved myself. When I get to Liverpool, I don't score for a while. I'm in England squad, but I still haven't. I've done good things in my career, but you at 18, you were shaking the Premier League, right? So did you not think to yourself, like, have some respect? You know what I mean? Look what I've achieved. Look what I've won already. I'm still a young man.
I think you can think that, but they're still going to write whatever they want. I'll give you an example. So I was in, I think it was Capello's, or maybe even, I'm not sure. Yeah, I think it was Capello's. And they wanted me to come and do the, and you know the media. So you go with the media and there's like just a ton of them sitting there, and you've got to answer questions. I said, why am I going to go there? I asked, I think it was Baldini. He said, why am I going to go there when I know the questions they're going to throw at me. They're going to ask me all these questions. I'm going to answer it in the way that I answer it. And they're going to write whatever they want to write. So just let them write whatever they want to write and let me have my time. But no, you've got to go. And I went, and then they're still going to write. Yeah.
Did it go the way that you thought it was going to go?
No.
The way you thought it was going to go?
100%.
Yeah. They're going to ask you the questions that you don't want to answer. It's going to be stories that you don't want in the paper.
There you go.
Okay.
So in the end, you're like, well, there you go. I told you, but you've got to do this. We've got to present someone. And right, cool, no problem. Came back, and I remember coming back for, it was an Israel game. I think it was an Israel and Russia game, I think it was. And, well, this is probably a low time, but it wasn't low for me because it's funny because I was like 30 at the time, or maybe 29 or 30, but I'd gone past all that time, period of, yeah, whatever it is, what it is. They're going to write whatever they want to write. That, it doesn't bother me. I kind of grown in like a Teflon skin. And they, across the back page was, oh no, not him again. It's like, that's quite rude, but you get on with it. And I went and played and did really well. And you got, in the end, they did say, not sorry, but they kind of, in their way that they wanted to write it, an apology. But now you have to go thick skinned with a lot of this. And then you look at Marcus, who's going through it right now. He's not on a great vein of form. He might not make the Euros. He might not. But, you know,
Harry Maguire recently as well.
He's had it quite bad again. I think, and this is the thing, you can write about someone's football, but then when you take it too personal as well, I think a lot of it's personal sometimes.
Do you think you're almost marked as a target, and then it's very hard to do any right?
Well, it was an easy target. Who else was going to take that? You know, it was easy. I remember getting criticized for 2004 in the media for the France game. So it brought me on to France, and you know, as a forward, right? So when you get brought on, you're like, give you all these instructions. Yeah, the holding midfielder, I want you to go and get the holding midfielder. They sit on the holding midfielder, and leave him up front, blah, blah, make sure he doesn't get on the ball. Okay, cool. End up with two holding midfielders. Which one? Makalele.
So you kind of hung out to dry a bit there, right?
So I'm like, okay, like, which one do I go on? And then in the end, I was the one who made the foul for the free kick.
Yeah. It was Zinedine Zidane on the free kick, to be fair.
What can you do?
What was the lowest point, like, with all that? That headline?
Possibly, but I was in a better place.
You were in a better place.
To deal with that.
Was there a time where it was really kind of like you wanted to just say something, or like, I've had it myself, but...
No, because anything I said would have been turned anyway, so I knew that I couldn't say anything. I remember, I can't remember what game it was. Wazza came on, and then I think he played the following game as I think it was his first start. And they were pushing Wazza to start. And I think it was Sven then. I thought I had a decent game. I'd set up the two goals. We won 2-0. I'd cross for Michael to score, and then I won the free kick for Bex to score. But then when you read back, and this is probably the worst thing, is you shouldn't be reading that. But when you read back, oh, he's terrible, Rooney should play, blah, blah, blah. But then it's what the manager wants. But again, that was opened the door for Wayne to come in, and then Wayne was just outstanding.
Yeah. And do you think maybe, have you got the respect you deserve now? You
know, I think do you know the funny thing is, I think it slowly started to come when I was older, and then there's some younger players that are playing similar to me, teams are seeing the value of having that sort of player up front. But I was different to a lot of players because I would run channels. I would hold the ball up and I'd dribble. I'd play on the left wing. I'd play on the right wing. I played every single position. I played centre back. So I would play everywhere, and I was a little bit different to them. But then when people look at like a forward who holds the ball up, they're like, oh, I appreciate that now.
Yeah.
Because when it's not there and the ball keeps coming back, you're like... chasing a ball into the channel and just getting them to kick a ball out, and you're like, no forward wants to chase the ball into a channel. Let's be honest.
If we're going to talk about respect as well, we've got to talk about the 5-1 game as well, which I'll never forget watching. It was such a special game that I had this t-shirt that I then went and bought, and it had an England flag on the side, and it had England 5, Germany 1. And it had your name. It had the England goal scorers there, and by Germany, it just said a German. And I always remember this. And I must have been, I don't know, like 13, 14, something like that. But I wore that every day.
But how many people come up to you even today, like to talk about that game? Really,
so many everywhere, all over the world as well.
Really,
and it's funny because you're talking about when you're 13, and this is the thing that people who are like, people come up to me and I'm like, yeah, that game in England, Germany, 5-1. I was this age, and I'm like, what age?
It's mad.
Funny going mad.
It's crazy.
No, it was great. It was just and as well, you got to remember the pressure we were under as well, because we lost the last game at the old Wembley. Didi Hammond scored the goal, and
I don't really remember the context around it. That's the thing. I remember watching the game, and I remember obviously the celebrations afterwards, and that scoreboard, you know, seeing the scoreboard at the end of the game, and just seeing it everywhere, every paper. But what was the context of that game, and the lead up to it?
We'd lost the last game at the old Wembley, so that had been demolished, and that was Didi Hammann scored the
last game at Wembley.
And that was Kevin Keegan's last game. He retired. He resigned at the end of the game. And then obviously Sven came in. We played Spain. We beat them, and then that was the next game. But that's the first qualifier for him. And then we go 1-0 down after 7 minutes. But yeah, we had some fantastic players, and one thing with Sven is, and it was similar to with Julia, he'd have this little clipboard, and then he would be showing everyone where to move, and I quite like that, because again, it's visuals for me, and you can actually see, okay, well, you want me to go in there, but what happens when this, no, come out here, so when you go onto the pitch, everything's there for you already. It's already there, and then when you get the ball, then it's for you to improvise and do your own thing. So it was really good, and then we had quality players.
What went so right in that match?
Just the chances that we created.
Just clinical, on the brain.
We were very, very clinical. And Michael was on fire at that time.
It seemed like though he was underdogs in that game, like massively underdogs. You know the talent we had in that squad. It seemed like it was a massive shock. Like, wow, we just beat Germany 5-1.
Do you know they'd not lost a competitive game in 50 plus games at home?
There you go.
It's unbelievable.
And the clipboard really does work. Because I always think this with you lads, is when you get shown the clipboard or you see a substitute looking at the clipboard, I always think you're just paying them lip service with it. You sort of see a manager frantically going, like moving these things around or writing on it. But it seems you genuinely are listening.
No, I think it's visuals. A lot of people learn differently. So I like to see what they're trying to... And with Gerald Julio, we would do mannequins on the full pitch. There'd be like 50 mannequins all over. And he would say, the ball's there, and we'd have to run into position and blah, blah, blah. Do that for 30 minutes.
Really?
Just shadow play. But again, visuals, and it sticks with you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
But you had obviously a tremendous career. But obviously, you had Liverpool, you move on to Birmingham, to Wigan, to Aston Villa. You know, how did you find those clubs?
Birmingham, it was just something that came about. I still had a year left, and Rick Parry, then CEO, said, accepted a bid from Birmingham, blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, that's fine.
Did you not want to leave?
No. I was happy to stay and fight for my place, but the message was, no, so-and-so's coming in and you won't play.
Was it Cissé coming in? Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. When you hear that, your time's done. So I went to Birmingham. Enjoyed the time in the sense of the camaraderie, etc., the club. It was tough because I'd gone from, and no disrespect to the players, but I'd gone from being with Stevie, with Michael, with Paddy Berger, with Danny Murphy, with Hippier, with all these players. All I had to do was make runs. So, and I know someone's finding me, then I'm making runs and no one's looking at me. Yeah. And I'm making runs and no one's even looked up. Like, okay, no one wants to play the ball forward. No one wants to play the football forward. They're hesitant because they don't trust themselves. Because reality is the actual levels are pretty much the same. If you tell someone to go and ping a ball there, they can ping the ball. If they go and pass the ball there, they can do it. It's just whether they feel confident enough or if they can trust themselves to do it. Whereas at Liverpool, you had to. And so I went from that to that. I just had to make an adjustment. The second year was tough because we'd gone from battling and we were you always want a progression, and I think Birmingham, we tried to progress too quickly. We went from a battling team to try and get these real technical team players in, and it wasn't going to fit with majority of the battling players. So we got relegated that season. Went to Wigan, and Wigan was great. Again, it was similar to the first.
That's a good time at Wigan, wasn't it? Some good players as well. Yeah. Wow.
We done okay. Yeah. Well, when I first got there, we were in transition. We had Paul Jewell, and it was tough because we stayed up from the last game of the season, the Sheffield United. We had to win that game to stay up and won that game.
Penalty, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And
we stayed up and it took its toll on him because he resigned at the end of the season as well. He says it was just too much. And then obviously Steve Bruce and people like that come in, and then that's when you start to really start getting the players. Yeah. And then they made a bit of money because, again, you got Palacios, your Figueroas, your Valencias.
Mm. Yeah.
Selling them players. Yeah. They've done really well. Mm.
Villa, when we signed Immortal Villa, he was...
You played together at Villa, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I observed more on the bench.
How was he at Villa?
Playing.
He was good.
I noticed, obviously, when you watch and playing against him before, but then when he's in your team, and like he says there, when he holds the ball, I've never seen someone be able to jump. Normally you jump and you flick the ball on. Yeah. He used to jump, like chest, hold the ball up, and like two defenders as well, whilst the ball was literally all in the air, and come down in one motion and still battle players off, and then literally have the quality just to lay it off to the sides as well. Yeah. But Shido as well, wasn't he?
Yeah. Look, you're quite lively, aren't you? So.
Well, we had a lively dressing room, didn't we? Jesus. We had a lively dressing room.
Was he one of the lively ones in the
There was so many.
It was a good dressing room.
It was funny.
Who was in there since? James Collins, Ginger Dunny,
Luke Young, right. Stephen Warnock, myself, Emil, John Carew, Gabby, Youngie. Yeah. The Stan, Sidney Petrov. Yeah. We had a good squad. But the one time I see you lose it, and it was only one, and it wasn't a nice sight.
Was it at you? Or?
No, thankfully, it wasn't at me. It was half time at Crystal Palace. I think it was the FA Cup game.
Mm.
And we was 1-0 down at Palace away. We weren't playing well. And I was on the bench, and I'd come in like half time, and then was it Martin who was just giving you stick, and he's just headed down, and he was taking it as you normally would as a player, and all of a sudden he just shook his head and he just got up, and it took like Dunny was on your back, Big Ginger was on your back, Stan Petra was on your back, trying to drag him back, fitness coach was on it, and he was literally just taking bodies with him, just like charging towards the gaffer and the staff. No, of course not. But it was like, I was like, obviously that one again. We ended up coming, I think we come back, didn't we? We got a draw in the...
Do you remember all this?
I think, you know, the thing is, it was a weird time to be at Villa in the sense of we were really on the cusp of something.
Yeah.
But we just couldn't make it into that top four.
We're trying to get into the top four years in a row.
And we had some wonderful young players, and I think I would have been 30, 31. But you got to remember, Martin O'Neill had me when I was 18 till 22.
Mm. So you're still thinking you're 18?
Yeah.
Get the ball, run, turn.
Yeah. So he's changing the same things.
Yeah.
That's not me. Totally different player. But nah, it was a case of, look, for me, I saw it as, look, there's ways of talking to me anyway. And I'd gone from being a young player, you just keep your head down, to now a senior player. When the groups need something from the manager, they're coming to me to ask me to go to the manager and sit down with the manager and talk. So then now the manager's really... And Martin's one of those ones that the reality is you should just shut up and just take it.
Yeah.
But I wasn't at that point anymore. And then there was another one at Fulham, wasn't there?
Yeah. Was it Fulham? Just a tight dressing room. There's no escaping that dressing room.
What happened at Fulham? they don't want to talk.
Make it sound like what happened at Fulham stays at Fulham.
Look between them. Yeah.
What did happen at Fulham?
I don't think I was in there. I was outside.
They don't want to talk about Fulham.
No, I wasn't in there. I was warming up.
He was in there.
I thought you was in there.
Nah.
I know what you did in Fulham.
Well, because you
kept
acting out.
Yeah, no, I was in there. What was the phrase? He was
not what it was. So I'll give you the scenario.
Yeah.
So
I think you would.
So we were losing, but we had a bad game, and I'm on the bench with Sidi, and 5 minutes ago he brought me on. And ball got pinged into me. The first one, it flew past me. I couldn't get it. Next one, coming to me, touched, played it back. Blah, blah. And then coming in at full time, we lost the game. And instead of having a go at John Carew and Gabby, who had played 85 minutes, he's gone round at everyone. And then he goes, and the strikers, and you are pointing at me. Goes, if you could control the ball, you'd play every game.
Which one
do you mean? He goes, just in general. Goes, no, but I've had two balls into me, and I'm acting out the touches. Yeah.
He's getting up. He's acting it out.
Are you acting it out?
He's like, Emil, just control the ball. Come on. And I'm like, fucking hell, this is... Oh, it's funny.
Was it gold?
Yeah. It was a tight dressing room, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tight. And you're giving a demo.
He's up in the middle of the room going... He's coming. He's like, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, he's getting his leg up here. How can I control this one? Funny. Yeah. But you got to shut up with Martin.
Superb. Yeah. Right, so then obviously retirement happens. How did you find that? I know you were coaching the women's team for a while.
I kind of fell into that. Leicester obviously bought the women's team and brought it under their banner, as most clubs are doing now. And yeah, they asked me to be ambassador, which I took up, and then got into coaching. And I enjoyed it. It was great to be on the pitch again, because again, that's what we know. That's what everyone, we enjoy. And it was a great time to be around Leicester in the sense of the progression they're taking. They took over the training ground that I trained at as a player, because they went men went on to their new training facility. So it was great to be back in and around it. We got promoted. Luckily, we stayed in the WSL, and it's just progression each year. Mm.
So then you became Martin O'Neill, I assume, and it's the same style, and you're doing the same thing.
Similar.
Yeah. Same team, same subs. 4 days off after a game. No chance.
Yeah, I used to be jealous of that. It was to see Villa boys having a few days off. What's going on over up there?
Weren't sustainable.
No. But again, for team morale, that was probably the best time.
Yeah.
But like you said, it wasn't sustainable to be playing. And I think Gabby's brought it up. We played United. We won. Gabby scored. And then that's a Saturday morning, afternoon. We didn't come back in until Thursday.
Yeah.
Wow. What?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that was regular.
So then you look at it. How much fitness are you missing out on? How much pitch time are you missing?
But I mean, players, you could fly anywhere there. Like, there must be a few flying around the world.
Vegas, Miami.
That was the regular few times.
Yeah, we'd done Everton away as well. It was us and Everton that was going for fourth, and we beat Everton last minute winner. And we was like, go on, Gabby, get into the send Gabby and Youngie in. Send him in, because we'd have 2 days off minimum. It was like, go on, Gabby, get into the gaffer. And we didn't come back until Friday.
So they had the secret sauce for negotiating
the They were the golden boys. So Gabby will come in. We came in, like I say, United game. Mm. Gabby scored, and everyone, oh, Gabriel, this is from, brilliant game. Yeah. Gabby was like, see you Thursday. It's like, didn't hear it. See you Thursday. And then he's like, what? You want off till Thursday? Yeah. Okay, I'll see you Thursday.
Yeah, that was it.
Why not?
That's how you do it.
Yeah. That's it. Fitness, that's pretty standard.
Fitness coach is like in the corner.
But that's like kids with a parent, isn't it?
We just try and push to see what you can get.
The funny thing is, we all wanted to run through a brick wall for him.
We all wanted to run through a brick wall for him because
we never wanted to let him down in that sense of...
If he gives you those days off, it's like a piece, a big carrot, I suppose. And then you win, you can have them off.
Everyone had it. All the subs, everyone. So it was all
play, right, okay.
Yeah, we was gonna get a horse, wasn't we? It was like a common theme with Martin. He'd literally come in, so he'd take the whole squad to every single game, home and away, suited and booted, like 25-man squad, and everyone knew the script. So you get in there, you're waiting to whatever time, 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
He'd come in, and he'd get a bit of paper out, and then, like as if to say he's gonna like read the formation team. He'd just go, same team, same subs. and put it back in.
With a bit of paper as well.
And then walk out the door, right? And then we was like, so then the ones that are not in the squad would just get up and walk out and then go to the players' lounge or upstairs and wait for the game and let the boys get. And then it got to a point where it was like, we need to, there's a few that owned horses and we was going to buy a horse and call it same team, same subs. And have it in Aston Villa colours as well. But it never materialised. That would have been class. Yeah.
Oh my God. So now, obviously, you were talking just before we started this, like your boys are doing really well. Yep. They're at Man City. I mean, boys been since four?
Yeah, the oldest one's been there since he was four and played under sixes. Yeah, it was weird because my wife driving around summertime trying to find somewhere for the eldest one to go and enjoy, blah, blah, blah. And we see a summer camp. She drives in. I wasn't there. So she drives in. And it's a Man City summer camp. So she goes, can my son come in? He goes, yeah, no problem. Bring him in. Because he's got to be six and older. And what? He's only four. Goes, ooh, I'm not sure. Big lad. Goes, oh, but he's a big lad. He comes out waddling out. He's fine. Go on. He's wearing his Aston Villa kit at the time because at Villa at the time. After that week that he's been there, they invite him down to the Platt Lane at the time, to the main one. So he's been there since.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, and how old is he now?
He's 18.
He's got a chance?
Yeah, he's got a chance. He's doing well.
I've heard he's doing well.
Yeah, he's enjoying. And the thing is, I was probably one of the best parents to have around. Thinking I'll be there near off every session or whatever it is, but I wouldn't get involved. I'd try and stand away so they can't see me because I don't like the kids looking over at me. You're concentrating on your coaches, what your coaches are telling you. So I was probably the best. And then parents evening, I'd try not to be there. But no, it's good to go and listen to what their coaches want and think of your son, etc. Now it's just progressed to now he's under 18s, got an under 16 as well. Who, fingers crossed, is going into the under 18s as well.
Two pension funds there.
Well, I was going to say, your parents must be so proud as well, you know, to have seen the success they've had with you and grandkids as
well.
And it's an incredible legacy your family's made.
Nah, it's, they've done well. They've done well. So, done well. And then
still a long way to go.
But again, it's funny because now they get to watch their grandsons play. They don't live here in England. They live in the Caribbean, but they still get to watch it on because my son plays in the UEFA Youth League sometimes. So, and that's on ESPN, and they get ESPN Amazing. Over there.
Oh, that's
so
great.
He gets to see
that's
that. Class.
Incredible.
Right, this is the part of the podcast where we get the listener messages in. If you're all right to get involved as well, that'd be handy. This one's from Jake and Sam. One of my closest friends has, through no fault of their own, booked their wedding on the same day as England's open against Serbia. We're, of course, huge football fans and recognise the travesty of not being in front of the huge screen all together, pints in hand. The bride has stated under no uncertain terms, that she sees as much as a phone on the table, she'll kick off more than San Marino during an injury crisis.
Nice reference there.
We don't want to ruin anyone's big day, but as they're catering for dietary requirements of celiacs and vegans, we feel that our football requirements need to be met. We implore you to help soften her heart and allow us to enjoy their big day the way we want to, ignoring them for 90 minutes plus stoppages. P.S. The bride's name's Maddie.
I've had thoughts on this since we spoke about this because it is a disgrace, isn't it? If you go to a wedding, they're often in the summer. So
this is an England major tournament. It's a major tournament.
It's a major tournament. And we've said that, you know, as they've said in this email, vegans could be catered for. There's all sorts of dietary requirements. You know, you should be able to list any football requirements that you have when you're replying. And people get funny, especially, I'm going to have to say, it's like a lot of the time, the brides especially seem really funny about phones on tables and things like that, if they're not football fans, there needs to be a change in the system here.
Well, I just have to, they always come over and the first thing question is like, any allergies, any dietary requirements, you know, any football requirements?
Yeah, it should be
normal. There's only one extra question. Yeah, we'll have the match on, please.
Yeah.
Then everyone goes, great.
What were thoughts on this?
My thought is, what time's the game?
Yeah.
Can you split it up where you have, we have our schedule set out, don't we, for our training? So could there just be a schedule for the game and then just come back into it?
Yeah, it's sensible.
Perfect. It's only 90 minutes of football.
I think you could do both at the same time, right? I'm not saying necessarily have the screen on with the game, but you know like how tables have got names, right? So say there's 11 tables, right? You could have first goal scorer. Okay, so this table or minutes. So this
it's free entertainment.
Yeah, so this table has got the first goal from 0 to 9 minutes. Okay, that table has got, and then you get everyone involved.
Everyone. Okay, there's cheering going on. Even everyone's if you don't like football, that's the thing. It doesn't exclude anyone who doesn't like football at the wedding. And
everyone's involved.
Yeah, but you know what makes me laugh? You walk in and you see like, you know, the groom side, the bride side. Instead of that, you've got 0 to 10 over there.
And the finishers.
10 to 20 over there. Injury timetable.
Is there a prize for?
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah,
That's what every girl dreams of.
100%.
On this though, I do wonder if we could offer a little service here. Like maybe we do just in the run up to the tournament, one a week. You send us the number of a bride or a groom that has banned football at their wedding, like Maddie here. Mm. Mm. And we get you, Crouchy, just to give her a little call.
Well,
and just
this is from Jake and Sam. If you could, I'll go straight down the barrel here. This one's to, so the message from Jake and Sam, the bride's name is Maddie. Hi, Maddie. Peter Crouch here from the Peter Crouch podcast. Emil Heskey's alongside me with Steve Sidwell and Chris Stark. We just want to say, be fair. You know, we know you're getting married. It's a fantastic day. We all want to enjoy it, but it is England-Serbia. just to have a... I have a quick thought for Jake and Sam. I'd like to watch the game. Cheers.
That's brilliant. That isn't super. That great?
Well, hopefully it can have some sway. If it's anything like my wife, it won't have any. But you never know. All right, should we move on?
Yeah, I've got a message here from Rory. This is interesting. So my father-in-law was a senior policeman in various police forces and boroughs across London. One of them was Ealing. He revealed over dinner on holiday recently that Crouchy was famous amongst the police officers and Ealing Station as he used to spend his free time relaxing in the reception area of the station just watching the comings and goings. Can Crouchy confirm this is true? Now I know you grew up. I know you grew up in Ealing. Hey.
Thoughts, Em? What are your thoughts there? Did you used to go to kind of Leicester police station? Have a look around?
What are you sitting in there? Who are you waiting for?
I don't know where to begin with this because I remember being in there quite a lot.
Oh my God, it's true. This is true.
But I don't know why. I never got arrested. So, like, my thoughts were, I don't, like, my sister lived opposite the police station.
Yeah.
You've got the fire station to there, and the police station was kind of over the road, and you walk into Ealing Broadway. And I know the ins and outs of that building, and I can't for the life of me understand
why. That's what I'm thinking. It's not a court, so
it wasn't like ever in trouble.
Just never, to be an entertainment.
Totally clean record. But I remember going in there at like 2 p.m, so... I don't know whether I've walked in and just got, like gone in there. I have been in there.
Just put it up, just watching.
Do you think it's like
what did they say to you?
Well, I wasn't like a Premier League player or anything. I was just a young lad having a look in the police station.
Peter Crouch used to hang out at police stations.
Really? Cool.
Did they kick you off?
Fun.
I think they were all really pleasant.
But what was this when the bill was big or something? Did you?
I'm in the bill.
The bill?
Might have been Tosh or something, you know.
He just wanted it in real life, like.
But kids like police stations, don't they? Let's be honest. Like, it's the thrill of the, of you know, the whole thing.
Brilliant. This is gold.
I feel like we're learning something new.
I don't.
So it's true.
All I can say is I know I've been in there a lot, and I don't know why, but I can't remember.
There's a message here from Mouth. Says, after hearing your endorsement episode the other week, it reminded me of something I spotted at the start of the season. I saw that Dr. Clinic Hair Hospital has become West Ham's official cosmetic treatment partner at the start of the season.
Say that as if everyone's got a cosmetic treatment partner.
Yeah, but in football, everything that's advertised is official suite partner, partner.
Yeah, so true.
Dr. Clinic Hair Hospital offers hair transplants and plastic surgery. I don't know if they're just going for a free advert here, but whatever, we'll go with the message. Initially, it struck me as a strange partnership, but then when you think about it, Wayne Rooney, Jurgen Klopp, Ryan Giggs, Danny Ings, etc., they're all owners of New Barnets. It makes sense. I guess we shouldn't be surprised, therefore, if we see Jarrod Bowen, Antonio, Soufal sporting new flowing locks at some point. And it's got me thinking of a Blowing Bubbles remix.
Are you singing this?
I'm not gonna sing it. I'm forever growing stubble, pretty stubble but no hair. I can't deny it doesn't reach my eye. And unlike my dreams, I can't comb and dye. Follicles always hiding. I've looked everywhere. I'm forever growing stubble, pretty stubble but no hair.
United.
That is an unbelievable remix. Oh, Mouth, exceeded yourself there. That is phenomenal.
Do you want to finish on a quick 11?
Okay, we do 11s on this podcast. Okay. We're big fans of these. This is a roast dinner 11, if you care to listen. This is Tim Cauliflowers and Cheese, Gravy Neville. Lamb Vertonghen, Scott Minto sauce, Danny Rosemary. Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, big fan. Big fan of the midfield. I like Ryan Pigs in Blanket. P. Hendry. Sweet Sidwell. He's always in there. Sweet Sidwell's always there. Beef Gillespie. Robbie Cabbage.
You won't be happy with that.
Robbie Cabbage. Dwight Yorkshire Pudding.
Yeah.
Yeah, superb. Yeah,
very good.
Love
good
work.
Very good. Very good. Obviously, it's probably a slightly different ending to most podcasts you've been on, but it's an absolute pleasure having you on.
Yeah.
Always a friend of the pod, so anytime you fancy coming on. Good luck to your boys as well.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Em.
Top man. Great. Love it.
Nice one, mate.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.
This episode is brought to you by aloadofpricks.net. We are the experts in selling houses. Chris couldn't sell his house. What did you do, Chris?
I couldn't sell my house for love nor money, Crouchy. 3 different offers I had, all at the last minute, fell through. I turned around to my wife and said, "What can we do to sell this house? Every estate agent is failing us." Then I told her, "Let's go to aloadofpricks.net."
But Chris, what did a load of pricks do for you?
They were brilliant, Crouchy. They sold my house right away. The sign had barely gone up when a well-dressed gentleman came along and offered me twice the asking price.
Chris, would you use a load of pricks again?
I'd use them every time, Crouchy.
Go to loadofpricks.net. They will sell your house like no other. Load of pricks, loadofpricks.net.